The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We continue in our review of this topic of how do you live, or how do we live rather, the Islamic life. And we've been looking at a lot of topics over these last nights. Tonight the topic is more of how, when we put everything together, and what we want to look at is the concept of a functional family. So whereas even last night we looked at a very individualistic topic about technology and the banes of technology, we mentioned the fact that there is a much good that comes out of technology, but there is also a lot of harm. But when we look at all of these topics that we have been looking at over these last few nights, we come to this topic tonight of the family. How does Islam envision a functional family? What is a functional family? And how do we get to that state where, as individuals, although we are individuals, but that we are able to come together and form a family that is based upon the ayat of the Quran, where Allah gives us the ideals of a Muslim family. And obviously we see the perfect example in the life of the Prophet and in the Imams of Ahlul Bayt, alayhum as-salatu was-salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. You know, when we look at our existence on this earth, we recognize that out of all of the relationships that we ever have, marriage is one of the few that Allah gives us the right to choose. We all came into this world from a mother and a father. Nobody has the right to determine their parents. Allah chooses. Allah chooses some souls to go into the family of a Muslim family, some to go into a Shia family. Allah chooses other souls that were in the pre-earthly existence to be born into a Jewish, into a Christian, into an atheist, into an agnostic family. This is determined by Allah where every soul goes. We have no choice. When you look at our siblings, right? We're born, our mother and father create us. Allah obviously creates, but our father and mother, they conceive us and we're born. And our siblings are also not chosen by ourselves. Whatever we get, we get. Right? And we are asked to deal with that, whatever we get. Sometimes we get great siblings or parents. Other times, there are challenges within a particular family. And so, whereas we cannot choose our parents, our siblings, other relationships, grandparents, so on and so forth, Allah has given us the opportunity, as He shows us in the Quran, that we have the ability to choose our own spouse. Every man has the right to choose who he will marry in terms of his wife, his life partner, and every woman has the right to choose who she will marry to be her husband, and who will be that one that they will hopefully live the rest of their lives with. When Allah speaks about this institution of marriage, which, you know, even the hadith tell us that there is no institution which is more beloved to Allah than the institution of marriage. You know, it goes to the extent where the hadith of the Prophet tell us that when you marry, not only are you're completing half of your religion, but acts of worship like the salat, which pre-marriage had a certain reward. Once a man and woman get married, that prayer, the reward is magnified umpteen times. And many other acts of worship become much more rewarded by Allah when a person is married and they engage in that same act of worship. So in chapter number 24, verse number 32, Surah Nur, you know, a few nights ago when we spoke about the modesty of Islam, we looked at verses 30 and 31, if I'm not mistaken, from Surah Nur, where Allah told the men to lower their gaze, where Allah then told the women to lower their gaze and then wear the hijab, or wear the modest clothing that Allah has spoken about in the ayat. When you get to verse 32, Allah then begins to speak about marriage, about this union between a man and a woman. And look at how Allah words it. He says in the verse, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم, وَأَنْكِهُ الْأَيَّامَ مِنْكُمْ وَالصَّالِحِينَ مِنْ عِبَادِكُمْ وَإِمَائِكُمْ إِنْ يَكُونُوا فُقَرَاءَ يُغْنِيهُمُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ وَاللَّهُ وَاسِعٌ عَلِيمٌ. He says in the verse that, talking to men and women, he says, marry those amongst you who are single, and those of your male and female slaves that are righteous and fit for marriage. Now obviously this verse of the Quran is speaking about a time in Medina where there was active slavery. We know that Islam tried to eradicate slavery. It was not able to do it overnight because of the political and the social circumstances. So there was a time where slavery existed. At the time of the Prophet, at the time of the Imams, many of our latter Imams, they were slaves. And the Imams had them as their wives, and many of our Imams were born from these women. So Allah is saying that when it comes to the free men and women who are single, they have to get married, and also the slaves that are in the possession, that they also have a right to have marriage. And then Allah says something which is, I would say, an indicator for all of us, especially the youth who are not yet married and are worried about it. Because, one of the concerns many youth tell me, or their parents also share, is that my daughter or my son doesn't want to get married right now, mostly the son. Why? Well, they say he's still at university. He doesn't have a good job. He doesn't have a house. He doesn't have a car. He's not yet on his own two feet. And so financially, he's not in a position to marry and take on that responsibility. But Allah responds to that, and He says, إِنْ يَكُونُوا فُقَرَىٰ يُغْنِيهُمُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِ. If they are poor, if they don't have the financial well-being to get married, Allah says He will enrich them out of His grace. So brothers and sisters, wealth or lack thereof should never be an obstacle in marriage. I know it is for many people, but sometimes that is because as a society, as our various cultural backgrounds, we are expected to maintain a certain status quo. We're expected for our marriages to cost $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. We're expecting the mahar to be $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. We're expecting all of these grand celebrations in a wedding, which many times the youth, especially if they're in university or just graduating, that they can't afford. Maybe the parents are not in a position, they haven't saved, they have no financial ability to provide such a marriage, and so they end up forcing their children to delay a marriage. But as Allah says, if the children are not well-to-do, Allah will enrich them. Allah will make them self-sufficient. Allah will make them comfortable with whatever situation financially they find themselves in. Because as Allah says that He is wasi'un alim, He is all-embracing in His mercy and all-knowing. Now, I just want to spend a few moments on this verse because, again, the first part of my talk is about this construction of a family, a successful, pious family, one that is a functional family, as we've said.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyum. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.